Ajasya.
Ajasya.
Of the unborn.
Of the unborn.
Janma.
Janma.
Appearance.
Appearance.
Utpattanasanaya.
Utpattanasanaya.
For the sake of annihilating the upstarts.
For the sake of annihilating the upstarts.
Karmani.
Karmani.
Works.
Works.
Akartu.
Akartu.
Of one who has nothing to do.
Of one who has nothing to do.
Grahanaya.
Grahanaya.
To take up.
To take up.
Pumsam.
Pumsam.
Of all persons.
Of all persons.
Mano anyata.
Mano anyata.
Otherwise.
Otherwise.
Kaha.
Kaha.
Who.
Who.
Arhati.
Arhati.
May deserve.
May deserve.
Dehayogam.
Dehayogam.
Contact of the body.
Contact of the body.
Varaha.
Varaha.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Gunanam.
Gunanam.
Of the three modes of nature.
Of the three modes of nature.
Utta.
Utta.
What to speak of.
What to speak of.
Karmatantram.
Karmatantram.
The law of action and reaction.
The law of action and reaction.
The appearance of the Lord is manifested for the annihilation of the upstarts. His activities are transcendental and are enacted for the understanding of all persons. Otherwise, since the Lord is transcendental to all material modes, what purpose could he serve by coming to earth? Purport. Ishvaraha Paramaha Krishnaha Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Brahmasamhita 5.1. The form of the Lord is eternal, blissful, and all-knowing. His so-called birth is therefore an appearance only, like the birth of the sun on the horizon. His birth does not, like that of living entities, take place under the influence of material nature and the bondage of the reactions of past deeds. His works and activities are independent pastimes and are not subject to the reactions of material nature. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 14, it is said, Namam karmani vimpanti name karma phale spriha iti mam yo bijananti karma bhina sabhajyate. The law of karma enacted by the Supreme Lord for the living entities cannot be applicable to him. Nor has the Lord any desire to improve himself by activities like those of ordinary living beings. Ordinary living beings work for the improvement of their conditional lives, but the Lord is already full of opulence, all strength, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Why should he desire improvement? No one can excel him in any opulence, and therefore the desire for improvement is absolutely useless for him. One should always discriminate between the activities of the Lord and those of ordinary living beings. Thus, one may come to the right conclusion regarding the Lord's transcendental position. One who can come to the conclusion of the Lord's transcendence can become a devotee of the Lord and can at once be free from all reactions of past deeds. It is said, Karmani nirahati kintu chabakti bhajam. Karmani nirahati kintu chabakti bhajam. The Lord minimizes or nullifies the reactionary influence of the devotee's past deeds. Brahma Samhita 5.54. The activities of the Lord are to be accepted and relished by all living entities. His activities are to attract the ordinary man towards the Lord. The Lord always acts in favour of the devotees. The fruitive actors can attain their goals by devotional service. Oops. Oh, yeah. Did I miss a line there?
No.
Two lines. Yeah. The Lord always acts in favour of the devotees, and therefore ordinary men who are fruitive actors or seekers of salvation may be attracted to the Lord when he acts as protector of the devotees. The fruitive actors can attain their goals by devotional service, and the salvationists can also attain their goal in life by devotional service to the Lord. The devotees do not want the fruitive results of their work, nor do they want any kind of salvation. They relish the glorious superhuman activities of the Lord, such as his lifting Govardhan downhill and his killing the demon Puttana in infancy. His activities are enacted to attract all kinds of men, karmis, gyanis, and bhaktas. Because he is transcendental to all laws of karma, there is no possibility of his accepting a form of maya, as is forced on the ordinary living entities who are bound by the actions and reactions of their own deeds. The secondary purpose of his appearance is to annihilate the upstart asuras and to stop the nonsense of atheistic propaganda by less intelligent persons. By the Lord's causeless mercy, the asuras who are killed personally by the personality of Godhead get salvation. The meaningful appearance of the Lord is always distinct from ordinary birth. Even the pure devotees have no connection with the material body, and certainly the Lord who appears as he is in his Satchit Ananda form is not limited by material form. Om Agyanatimirandasya Janajana Salakaya Chakshu Vimilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishnam Vishnapitam Jena Mudave Swayam Kutada Mahiyam Dharati Swaradam Tikam Mukham Karoti Vajjalam Pamunam Gayate Janim Yatripadamaham Pande Sri Gurundinatarinam. So Prabhupada says here, one should always discriminate between the activities of the Lord and those of ordinary living beings. Thus, one may come to the right conclusion of the Lord's regarding the Lord's transcendental position. As we were saying here, why would the Lord come to, you know, what's his purpose for coming to the world? He's got everything. He doesn't need to come here to improve his position because he's excellent. So, you know, he's not coming for his benefit. And in fact, Prabhupada mentions here, and it is interesting to note that this is not the main purpose. This is the Lord's secondary purpose. Paritranaya sadhanam vinasaya chaduspitam. His first purpose is to protect the devotees, to please the devotees. That's his first purpose, to satisfy the desires of his devotees. And his second purpose is to vinashaya chaduskritam here, utpata nasanaya. Utpak nasanaya. So nasanaya is the same as vinasanaya, which means basically to destroy, to kill. Utpat, the upstarts is described. Utpat vayova gopate is also mentioned by Rupa Goswami. Devotional service which is not performed according to the principles of the smriti, the sruti, the smriti, the pancharatra, the puranas, Sutri Smriti Puranani Pantaratrika Vidhim means devotional service that is performed following the guidelines, following the rules and regulations of the scripture. Vina, without following, is utpat, a disturbance. So Krishna appears, nasanaya, to destroy the utpat, the disturbances that are created by the demons. Kamanya kartu grahanasya pumsam. He has nothing to do. Right? There is no necessity for him to perform ritualistic duties. He doesn't have to perform sacrifices. He doesn't have to do good karma to have good things happen to him. That's what we do. We think, I need to behave properly so I can improve my situation. But he doesn't have to do that. And so therefore, Vidura is coming to the conclusion. His purpose is to, and of course, you know, he's witnessed the activities of Krishna, and he's observed the activities of Krishna in relationship with the devotees, and he's seen how Krishna has destroyed the Kauravas. He's worked ultimately for the benefit of the Pandavas, which is another interesting point. Krishna himself is impartial, right? He doesn't, and this is this verse here, na mam karmani limpanti na me karma phale spriha iti mam yo bijanati karma bhina sabhajate. The Lord isn't involved in distributing the karma of the living entities. He doesn't do that. That's done by the material energy. It's under his sanction, but he doesn't can't be held responsible for the behavior of the living entities. And as a consequence, then, can't be held responsible for the reactions that they get for the activities that they perform. No? This is what Cardinal Pell said yesterday, or was it the day before, in the hearings. The Catholic Church can't be responsible for the activities of its priests, just like the bus company can't be responsible for the activities of the bus driver. Huh? Is that right? Well, so long as he's doing his job, right? So long as he's doing his job properly and he's driving the bus properly, then they're not responsible for what he does outside of his work. Is that right?
This is right, outside the job, but as long as he's in the duty, he's responsible to the bus company.
Yeah, so long as if he's driving the bus properly, then he's fine. He's okay. What he does in his spare time, they're not responsible for his behavior. Yeah? Anyway, people didn't like it. Now, why didn't they like it? He's right, he's correct. But the thing is, the problem is, the Catholic Church, out of a false sense of compassion, protected the, they knew that the priests were misbehaving, and they moved, you know, they moved them around. They didn't tell the people, watch out for this guy. He's a pedophile. Right. So Yes, Prabhupada says, you know, Prabhupada, in the purport of this verse, Nama Mam Karmani Limpati, he says that the owner of the factory is not responsible for the behavior of the workers in the factory. Huh? Prabhupada mentions this in this purport to that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, when you're on the job, then you've got to work, obviously. But in your spare time, whatever you do, that's your business. It's not the responsibility of the boss of the factory to monitor the behavior of all of his workers. Except when they're at work. And I guess this is a part of the problem. The Catholic priests were at work. That was their job, was to look after people. Instead of looking after people, what are they doing? Fiddling about. Well, no wonder people are upset. Because in one sense, that analogy doesn't, you know, the analogy isn't comparable. They were at work. And so the Catholic Church is responsible for their behavior. And especially, you know, for the priests, and we should be mindful of this, we're supposed to set an example. Right? Even when we're not at work, we're still at work. Well, there's the principle of an acharya. He's supposed to be setting an example. So in one sense, always at work. Always being checked. Always being monitored. But in any case, you know, if you know that somebody is a criminal, but you then protect them, then people are not going to be very impressed. It's illegal. It's illegal. And so therefore they were breaking the law by protecting people who were preying on others. Supposed to be protecting, and instead they're allowing their dependents to be abused. No wonder people are upset. So anyway, Krishna is not... he's impartial, right, in this regard. He's impartial because, you know, it's not that one person is favoured with wealth and beauty and fame and influence because God likes him. And then somebody else is suffering, got leprosy, all his fingers fell off, and... you know, no money or no nothing, because God doesn't like him. Right? God's not so mean. These circumstances, these situations come about as a result of the choices and the desires of the living entities. The choices and desires produce the activities. The activities then get a result. But this is the principle of karma. As it's mentioned in the Bible, as you sow, so you shall reap. Right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Right? So nobody innocent in the material world. Nobody's innocent. Right? We can't come and say, oh, yeah, I didn't know, it wasn't mine. I did nothing. Well, you know, oh, look at the poor innocent baby. Not an innocent baby. Who knows what that baby did in the previous lifetime? Well, could have been Adolf Hitler. Could have been Stalin, worse. Right? Could have been Mao Zedong, even worse. Right? These people were responsible for the deaths of millions of people. So what kind of a reaction? They got the good karma and they became very powerful and influential and whatever, but they performed very abominable activities. And so they'll get the reaction for that. As a result of their desire, not because of a desire of the Lord. He sanctions the activities of everybody by providing the facility of the material energy, because that's what they want. As we mentioned the other day, the government doesn't want to create a prison house. Right? They want to create a prison house wherein they have to rectify the miscreants, those who misbehave. But because there are personalities who transgress the principles of devotion, who transgress the ordinary laws of the law-abiding, civilized citizens of the spiritual world, and they have to create a place to keep them. That's called the material world. Just as when the city planners are planning a city, then they have to put a space aside for the jail. Right? They have to plan for it. They don't necessarily want to put people in jail, but they know it because there's going to be people who misbehave, and so therefore we have to. And in the material world, and Krishna knows, you know, why does Krishna want to come to the jailhouse? Right? Why does the king, what does the mayor or the, you know, the president or the premier or the king, why do they want to go and visit the jailhouse? Because what happens in the jailhouse? Is it a place for enjoyment? Jailhouse rock. Yeah, break the rocks. Break the rocks. And then when you don't have to break rocks, you think, oh, great, now I'm having a holiday. This is good. Right? Just like, you know, we have, how many days do we have for rest and recreation, for pleasure and enjoyment?
Two.
Two, if you're lucky. Right? And how many days do you have to work hard? Five. Right? So what is it, a place of enjoyment or a place of suffering? Do the math. Add it up. Huh? Why is it like that? Why are there 7 days in a week? Anybody thought about that?
I think some Romans, they have...
The Romans?
Yes, they have created 7 days.
They didn't have days of the week in the Vedic times? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday? Right? In Vedic times it was 7 days a week, weren't there? Huh? Yeah, of course they were. And I bet, you know, they had to work then too. So, material world is, you know, for the ordinary living entities, they're cast in the material, you know, they're bound by the laws of karma. But when Krishna comes, he's not bound by the laws of karma. And we can see that. And the devotees relish his activities and his pastimes not being bound by the laws of karma. Prabhupada gives a couple of examples here. Lifting of Govardhan Hill. You know, at 7 years of age, you know, how many of us are going to be able to lift up a hill? Right? We can't do it. To protect his devotees, to destroy the pride of Indra. Krishna is expert in destroying the pride of his devotees. Huh? One thing that Krishna doesn't like to see in the character of his devotees is pride. And so therefore he smashes it. Huh? The guru also smashes the pride of the disciple. I read a really nice story the other day. Yesterday was it about Jamuna. You know, Jamuna was very, very close to Srila Prabhupada, very, very, very close. And She was explaining how one has to have a mood of service, and that mood of service is without any tinge of motivation. Right? You know, the devotees get upset if their guru doesn't do what they want. Right? Keep them happy. Right? But she was explaining to a devotee who was visiting her and who had asked if she could come and bring a friend. And she told her, no, I'm not well enough, you know. And you should understand what the mood of service is. The mood of service is without any expectation. And she said, you know, the example is when you're cooking. When you're cooking for Krishna, you do everything in the mood of devotion, in a mood of offering, and in a mood of submission and surrender and obedience to Krishna, and without an expectation of some benefit. So, you know, we come in and we cook the offering in as deep a meditation as we can. This is why, you know, the kitchen is not a place for standing around, you know, talking about the footy or something. Or, you know, just some grum guitar. It's a place of meditation. Just like in the morning after Mangalartik, the deities are dressed and the puja is performed and Shalagram is worshipped. It's not a place where you just have a chat. What are you going to do tomorrow? Oh, what happened yesterday? It's a place of deep meditation. And so the kitchen is also a place of deep meditation. Then, you know, we come in, we do our offering, and then we get up and we go. Huh? We shouldn't be expecting some benefit from doing that. The benefit is actually doing the service. So, she said, serving Srila Prabhupada was like that. You would cook a meal for Prabhupada, you would, and this is how Prabhupada trained the devotees, bring it in, put it down, give it to Prabhupada, and then leave. And, you know, Prabhupada, whether he said anything or not, you don't hang around just to see if, you know, Prabhupada's going to tell you what a good boy you are. Because one is his assistant. So, and she gave the example of she was cooking on, you know, those bucket stoves that you have in India that they use with charcoal. And they're very difficult to manage because you've got to get the right kind of heat, so you have to have the right kind of hard charcoal and the right kind of soft charcoal, and you put cow dung as well. So Satsarupa Maharaj was Prabhupada's servant, and he told Jamuna that Prabhupada wanted to teach her how to make chapatis. Now, Jamuna already knew how to make chapatis, right? Jamuna is probably the best cook in ISKCON. She was personally trained by Prabhupada. And Satsarupa Maharaj made up a chapati, and she said it looked like an octopus. Chapati is supposed to be round, right? And puff up, right? So he made a chapati that looked like an octopus, and it was too hot. The flame was too hot, so, you know, and she asked him, you know, how do you know when it's ready to turn it? And he said, you could do it by the pimples. Comes up pimples, right? So anyway, he put the chapati on the stove and it was too hot and immediately it burnt the pimples, and so it, you know, didn't puff up. Couldn't puff up because it had all holes in it. The octopus shaped chapati. So then he took it into Prabhupada. And then he came back. And she said, "What did Prabhupada say?" And he said, "Excellent." So, you know, Prabhupada was smashing Jamuna's pride for being a good cook. This is the purport that I take from this. From the story, but then there's another very sad, sad in one sense story. Jamuna was in India, you know. This Jamuna, Malati, Gurudas, Shamsundara, you know, they were pioneers with Srila Prabhupada in New York. They were pioneers in. San Francisco, in London, you know, very, very dear to Srila Prabhupada. And they were travelling in India, and every morning in class, Jamuna would sit right close to Prabhupada. Right? And that was her habit. She'd been doing it since she lived to hear from her guru. A disciple should live to hear from a spiritual master. And that was her desire and her life, you know, was to hear from Srila Prabhupada. Then one day one of the sannyasis told her that, you know, in India things are done a little differently. You know, the men are at the front and the women are at the back, kind of thing, right? So she sat away from Prabhupada. Then the next morning Prabhupada spoke to her and he said, "Don't you want to hear from me?" And she was very upset and she told him the story. And the Prabhupada was quiet. And after that, she realized that very deep realization was that she realized that Prabhupada wasn't always going to be present. And that vapu, you know, that vapu service is. Important and should be taken advantage of when the spiritual master is present, but it isn't eternal. And the instructions of the spiritual master are more important, and one has to serve the instructions of the guru. And so she appreciated that service in separation is actually higher than the personal association of the spiritual master. But interesting, she always wanted to hear from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada always encouraged her. And he was again emphasizing this point. You know, she wanted to hear from him, but she was trying to follow the etiquette. And so Prabhupada was pointing out what's more important. And so in that way, removes the pride of the disciple, teaches the disciple, educates them in the right mood of, and Krishna also educates us in the right mood of devotional service. Devotional service is not performed for some material benefit. Even though, as Prabhupada says here, when Krishna favors the devotees, and so sometimes people are attracted Devotees are attracted to Krishna consciousness because they see that Krishna is partial to his devotees. He's actually ordinarily impartial. Right? As he says, I'm not responsible for your good or your bad karma. So in that sense, he's impartial. But the amazing thing about the impartial Lord is that actually he's partial to his devotees. He looks after the devotees. Just like people, you know, would criticize the devotees, Prabhupada, you know, those that say to Prabhupada, they don't have a job, they're not going to work, they're not benefiting society as a result. You know, devotees have got an easy life. Right? And Prabhupada would say, well, you've got an easy life, come and join us. Huh? I said, well, maybe. We'll think about that. But some people do. They see that they're envious somewhat of the devotees, or they appreciate, let's not say envious. Envious means, you know, somebody else has got something and you don't want them to have it, you want to take it away from them. But there may be some appreciation of the devotees because they're peaceful, they're happy, they're contented, they're enthusiastic about life. Even though the material world is such a terrible place, still the devotees are enthusiastic about their devotional service. Just like, you know, Dennis Natfine and the politicians that came to the temple, they noticed the mood of enthusiasm in the devotees. They noticed that the atmosphere is transcendental. That the devotees really are blessed. Huh? We may not have material facility, although in one sense we have material facility. Look at the building that we live in. We're well looked after. And, you know, we don't have to work. How many of us... Okay, some of you have to go to work. But we don't treat it like work. Huh? We don't treat it like work. And when we come, when we work in the temple, we don't feel like we're at work. Huh? When we're doing devotional service, how many of us feel like we're at work? Huh? You feel like you're at work? Got a clock on, clock off? Well, we do in one sense, but in another sense we don't. We're happy to work for Krishna. We like it, even if it's hard work. You know, I hated working for the boss. Always telling you what to do. Huh? And you know, all sorts of politics in the office. The best job I had was at the zoo. Because at least you can walk around and play with the animals and stuff. Play with Percy. Percy the chimpanzee. That's when I discovered that there are all living entities in all of the animals. You can see them. With Percy, there was this big labourer called Norm. Right? And he used to arm wrestle with Percy the chimp. And Percy was a big chimpanzee. And Norm was a big guy too. So he'd get in, you weren't supposed to do this, but anyway. If you got caught by the head keeper, you'd be in trouble. But he'd have arm wrestles with Percy. And Norm used to beat Percy, and Percy would get upset with it. So one day, he was having arm wrestles. And Norm was going like this, and then Percy would try to... He didn't like getting beaten. And he didn't like being in a cage either. He hated it. Because he was brought up with human, he was brought up in a human family. So he had freedom. And then when he got older and he was bigger, then he was dangerous. Because he's a big fella. So they had to put him in a cage and he hated the cage. So you could see the person you can see the personality in Percy. And also the crocodile, you know, the crocodile would just lie there. In the wintertime, his eyes would be open. But he'd just lie there, nothing moved. You look at him, you think, whoa, watch out. This guy, even though he's lying there, he's watching everybody and everything. If you make one false move, then he'll have you for dinner. So you can see the person. Anyway, what was my point? Got sidetracked. Oh, job. Yeah, working. So when we're going to go to work, even though I hated it, you know, to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning, hop on the train, sleepy, didn't want to go to work. You know, nobody jumps out of bed enthusiastically 6 o'clock in the morning when the alarm goes off to go to work. Huh? How many people do that? Oh, fantastic, Monday morning, great. Can hardly wait to get to work. Nobody. The material world is but for working for Krishna, the devotees are happy. The alarm clock goes off at 4 o'clock in the morning, they jump out of bed, joy, Hari Bol. Maybe. Anyway, once we get going, we become more enthusiastic. So the materialistic people see the devotees' enthusiasm for devotional service, and they see the devotees are happy and satisfied with what they're doing. They see also the devotees are materially looked after. People come and give them money and ask for their blessings. So they want that. Because Krishna is partial to his devotees. He looks after them. So they think, oh, I'll get looked after too. So Krishna's activities are also to attract the materialistic persons who have a little bit of piety. The karmis, the jnanis, and the bhaktas. The karmis are working for their personal benefit. This is karma. The karma that we perform is meant to get us some material position or some material wealth or some influence. Whereas a karma yogi is different. The karma yogi works for Krishna's pleasure, for Krishna's benefit. So sometimes, you know, the karmis, they're attracted to devotional service. The jnanis also are attracted to devotional service. A devotee is learned. Right? Devotee is very learned. And is able to answer pretty much anybody's questions philosophically. So the jnanis are also attracted. Although we're not karmis and we're not jnanis in one sense. But automatically the devotees, the bhaktas, automatically are endowed with knowledge. They're endowed with material benefit, although actually they're renounced from it. Devotional service automatically endows upon the devotees knowledge and renunciation. If it's performed properly, if devotional service is performed with a pure motive, there will be problems if we engage in devotional service and we're looking for material benefits. That's mixed. A pure devotional service, that which is the most satisfying, is performed without any anyabhilashikashunyam jnanakramajanavritam, without being covered by motives of benefit, whether philosophical or physical. But the devotees automatically have these things. Because Krishna is partial. And so therefore, and Krishna does that to attract the others. Pavitranaya sadhana vinasaya chatushkritam. So we'll be attracted to devotional service. Even if we have material motives, Krishna will attract. The devotees will attract. And so that's Krishna's purpose. That's our purpose in one sense. Krishna's purpose is our purpose. And so we're here to serve Krishna, and Krishna is here to serve others by attracting them to devotional service. Now here, his activities are to attract the ordinary man towards the Lord. The Lord always acts in favour of the devotees, and therefore ordinary men who are fruitive actors or seekers of salvation may be attracted to the Lord when he acts as protector of the devotees. Right? But it's not a material thing. It's not a, you know, the benefits that the devotees get are spiritual benefits, not meant for material exploitation. That's the verse in the Bhagavatam. Material benefits are not meant for sense gratification, but rather one is meant to live a healthy life with a focus on devotional service. And so those material benefits that we have should be used for supporting our devotional service, not for enjoying material facilities. Because if we're trying to enjoy material facilities, what's the end result?
Bondage.
Yeah, well, reactions. It will be taken away. What you enjoy, you'll suffer later on because it will be taken away. Right? The Chitrupa went with one of the devotees to the family court yesterday, and she said it's horrible. The women are all crying, being threatened by the men. So you know, one day they're all love and happiness, huh? Then what happens? The next, I mean, not all marriages like this, but mostly it is. At least there's, you know, there's some happiness in the beginning, but then there's separation at the end. Right? That happens to everybody. There's no such thing as a happy marriage. Right? Maybe happy for a little while, but then when there's separation, there's pain. I saw it with my father. My mother, you know, 5 years, maybe longer, had Alzheimer's, and my father struggled to look after her until she became unmanageable. You know, she'd wake up at 10 o'clock at night and then walk out of the house and disappear. Huh? And then dad would wake up and went, "Where's Mary gone?" She's just gone. She would always walk to her old. She always says, "I want to go home." So she means, "I want to go home to my mum and dad's place in North Adelaide." So my brother went to Children's Street and found my mum looking for a house. Only thing is, they knocked the house down and built a bunch of flats there. So whenever mum tries to go home, she gets to the street and she can't find a house. Right? So, you know, my mum and dad, very affectionate and supportive of each other and attached, right, as you do, or as is want to happen. But then mum had to be taken away from dad. And it affected my father. For months, he was depressed. Right? That's what happens. You become attached. You have a happy family. I never, you know, I saw my mum and dad fight, when I say fight, argue, maybe twice in my life when I was very young. But never, you know, never huge screaming, this, that, and the other, like in the family court. huge quarrels. Really heavy, heavy. The men have to take out restraining orders and keep the men away because the men bash the women up. Huh? Terrible. And so, pleasure in the beginning, but pain in the end. I saw it with my dad. It took him quite a few months to come to terms. He was grieving from the fact that he'd lost his wife. Lost mum. Alzheimer's is a horrible disease because it takes a person away. And they're there, they look like they're there, but they're not. So this is, material life. You try to enjoy material existence, then as much enjoyment as you have, you'll ultimately have to suffer because it will be taken away from you. Right? And if you're attached to that enjoyment, what is it? It's painful. So that's why Krishna recommends we have to be sober and steady. Right? Don't get too excited now you're married and you've got a beautiful wife. Right? And don't get too depressed when you and her get old. Right? Because that's just the nature of material existence. We have to be sober. Dhiras tatra namu yati. But some people are attracted. We may be attracted to devotional service, thinking that we can enjoy it. There is enjoyment. There's transcendental pleasure in the performance of devotional service. That's why the devotees are happy. That's why we're happy. To work hard for Krishna. Right? The devotees aren't looking for, most of the devotees that I know, anyway, they're not looking, have a break. No, they're thinking, okay, what's the next thing I've got to do to serve Krishna? What's next? What's next? What's next? They're inspired to serve Krishna, even at the expense of their own personal comfort. Because they're happy to please the Lord. And when the Lord's happy, then they feel happy. Huh? Just like Jai Sachi, he loves to cook for the deities and for the devotees, but then at the end of the day, it's like, oh, and the next morning, can't get up. Even his son, who's only 21 or whatever, Jai was saying, oh, Jai Sachi wants to train you up so you can take over. And he said, oh. Right? So even when you're young, there's pain. Isn't it? Right? But the devotees don't mind accepting pain for serving Krishna. They like it because Krishna's happy. And they're happy as a result. When we try to enjoy devotional service from the material platform, then Krishna teaches us a lesson. Even that you cannot do. That, or we shouldn't do. Just like Krishna comes to the material world, but he doesn't come here to enjoy as such. Of course, whatever he does, he enjoys. He's the supreme enjoyer. So wherever he goes, whatever he does, it's enjoyment. He's the personification of enjoyment. Sakti Ananda. In the Brahma Samhita, it was described how his body glows, right, with knowledge. He glows with, or he's suffused with this energy of all knowing, all knowingness, and all blissful. We can't even imagine, right, what it's like. But we get an inkling from that taste that we get from performing our devotional service. And we're very, very happy as a result of that opportunity. So, to attract the devotees. That's his main purpose, to please the devotees. Even if they have some material motivation, that's okay. What is it? Akama, sabakama, va, moksha kama, udarahi. Tidrena, bhakti jogena, yajeta, purusha, puma, param, is it? Puma? Param. Yeah. So even with desire, without desire, with a desire for liberation, or just with a desire to render devotional service, that's the best. One should perform devotional service. That's what Krishna encourages by his appearance and by his favouring of the devotees. And by his encouragement of pure devotional service, we can ultimately go to him. If we are attracted to material things and we worship Krishna for material things, we stay in the material world. Right? But if we are attracted to rendering service as Krishna wants it, not as we want to enjoy it, but as Krishna wants to enjoy it, then we'll be elevated to the spiritual platform, which is the ultimate goal of rendering devotional service. In the process, the demons are destroyed. In the process of devotional service, our demonic inclinations, aspirations are actually destroyed by the purification of devotional service. What is it? Interesting, yes. Just while we're on it. See if I can find it quickly. What is it? Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajan. What's the next line? Anybody know? Okay, what's the first line? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll find it. I've got it here. And one more point I want to make. That's 54, isn't it?
Yep.
54. Just one little note. Yastvindra gopa matavindra maho svakarma pandhanu rupa falabhajjana matanoti karnani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govinda malipurusham tamaham bhajame. So, Krishna gives the karma for Indra and for the Indragopa, the little germ. So everybody is rewarded their karma impartially by Krishna. Right? But for the devotee, he burns up the karma. Right? For those who are engaged in devotional service, he burns up their karma. And how does he do that? Here. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur mentions, God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in the way that is consequent on the deeds of their previous births and to enjoy the fruition of their labours. Right? So this is good and bad karma awarded to you impartially as a result of your desire. Right? But for the devotees, it's different. This is attractive to everybody, or even to us, or especially to us. Out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out. And how does he do it? You may not like this, but this is how he does it. By the fire of ordeal. Huh? By the fire of ordeal. What does ordeal mean?
Hardship.
Yeah, suffering. Bit of suffering.
Which words?
Ordeal. O R D E A.
Verse.
Which?
Verse.
Oh, this is Brahma Samhita 5:54. Huh? God impartially induces the fallen souls to act in a way that is consequent on the deeds of their previous lives, that's our karma, and to enjoy the fruition of their labours. But out of his great mercy to his devotees, he purges out by the fire of ordeal the root of all karma, that is, nescience, ignorance, and evil desires. So, you know, the devotees don't mind engaging in devotional service, even if there's some austerity or ordeal, because they know that ultimately that's Krishna's mercy. It's Krishna's mercy, and that we get purified by that. So therefore they're always engaging themselves in devotional service, because it's a means of purification. He's not thinking, no, all this Krishna's been so mean, not me. Huh? Or he's thinking, I'm so lucky. I'm just getting a little reaction and an immense amount of purification. Karma, though without beginning, is still perishable. And how is it perished? Through the fire of ordeal. Gets burnt up. The karma of those who work with the hope of enjoying the fruits of their labours becomes everlasting and endless and is never destroyed. So even when we engage in devotional service with a desire to enjoy it, there are reactions for that, because that's not what devotional service is for. Devotional service is enjoyable, but we don't do it just for the enjoyment's sake. We do it to please Krishna. Does anybody have any comments or questions? I didn't actually finish, but none of my new asked me to finish class at 8:30, so I better at least finish at 9:00. Janet?
I've been told there's 10 offences, but
you were telling this the other day.
But now there's 11 offences.
There's 11 offences.
I being told just to excuse, because you know, it's just but it doesn't make my mind peaceful. Please,
Gana gets upset. I get upset too, but I keep quiet about it. I'm not upset. I can live with it. Yes, it has been added. Where's the nectar of devotion? Is there a nectar of devotion over there?
Sometimes our spiritual masters or the spiritual initiating gurus, they say there's an attempt. There's an offense to be inattentive by trying to hold the name of the Lord. But yet they initiate only 10 offenses.
Hang on. So what is it? How many offences are there? 11. How many offences are there in the chanting of the holy name?
I mean, there's hundreds, but...
There's hundreds? Let me just find it. I think I have an understanding. I have an angle on it, as you think. Just trying to find out where the two defences are in the Jabba. Oh, hang on. Offences to be avoided. Where are the ten offences in the Nectar of Devotion? Chapter 8. Now, the ten offences. The recitation of the ten offences in the temple room after Tulsi Kirtan is taken from the Nectar of Devotion. Right? And so here's what it says. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Right? And then at the end of the 10 it says, every devotee who claims to be a Vaishnava must guard against these offences in order to quickly achieve the desired success. There is none of this. It is also an offence. Right? But somehow or other, somewhere along the line, a devotee in the temple, you know, the temple song book, put that extra line in. Right? It was done in Sydney. Put that extra line in. So then now when you read the ten offences, you get to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names, to maintain material attachments, even after understanding so many instructions on this matter, it is also an offence to be inattentive while chanting. Right? Anybody heard that recently? You probably heard it this morning. Right? But it's been added by some enthusiastic person. But it is not in the original recitation of the ten offences. So when devotees like me and Gana, who joined in the 70s, hear this, we think, where the hell did that come from? Because it wasn't there when we joined up. But somehow or another now, there are 11 offences, not 10. Right? And my understanding is being inattentive is part of 10. To not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and maintain material attachments, because we're inattentive because we're thinking about that, and we're thinking about this, and we're thinking about all the other material attachments that we've got. So we don't need to recite this, and it is also an offence. We don't need to do that. This wasn't part of the original process. Now, in my understanding of things, it came about because in the Harinam Chintamani there is a discussion of the ten offences. But then after that discussion, there's also a discussion about inattentiveness being the source of all offences. Right? If you read the Harinam Chintamani, you'll see it there. So there's kind of a rationale as to how it came into how it became the 11th offence. But I can live with the 11th offence, but I'd be happy if people didn't say it also, because it wasn't there in the beginning. But it's now been added. It's like the cat in the basket. It has to be there. Because what will happen now is, say, if I or Gyana recite the ten offences, then we just say, anybody who claims to be a Vaishnava should carefully guard against these ten offences, and all be good. If somebody come up, take the food, you left out being inattentive. What do you mean I left it out? It wasn't there in the first place. That's what will happen. The old fuddy duddies will come along and they'll say, oh, it used to be, and then the new guys will come along and say, hey, you didn't do that properly. He missed out the 11th offence. What are you talking about? There's only 10. So inattentiveness. But inattentiveness, and there's a couple of things also. Inattentiveness, there's a discussion about being sleepy, isn't there? You know, not being awake, being inattentive. There's a few things which in and of themselves are not an offence, but may give rise to offences. That's the discussion in the Harinam Chintamani. Not that it is an offence, but it may be a cause of offence. Because then, you know, it is possible for you to chant, be inattentive, and not be offensive. But stick around. The offences will come. Okay. So what do you want to do, Gunnar? Legislate the banning of the 11th offence?
The word has to be...
All those in favour of getting rid of the 11th offence, raise your hands.
It's in the songbook.
I think Prabhupada, when he wanted 10 offences of initiation, did he say, count on the 11th? Did he say do 11?
It's taken from the Nectar Devotion, word for word. And you see it, that's what I'm saying. That you see it there, that last bit. Every Vaishnava who claims to be a devotee should carefully guard against these 10 offences. There's no 11th offence between the 10 and that last bit.
So we
should follow Prabhupada. Get rid of these speculators.
But it does say that Chintamani
Harinam Chintamani
is an offence to chant
the
whole thing and to be
inattentive. Go and have a look at it. It says it's the source of offence. It can give rise to offence. It doesn't say that it actually is an offence.
If it does say 10 offences, then who are we to say it should be 11? I mean, who are we to be adding on?
You guys can take this discussion out into the courtyard. May the best man win. This is what happens in religious institutions. They create these kind of rules and regulations that you've got to follow. Some of them you actually don't have to. And so that's why Krishna has to appear from time to time to re-establish the parampara.
So we understand that the Bible is the neck of devotion, and those 10 offences are basically, that's the thing, that's the parampara that's going to last for the next 20,000, 30,000 years.
10,000, yeah. I agree. But it's interesting, you see, that the devotees now have been brought up with that. And so therefore they're going to be, you know, because we have this culture, you got to do it right. And you got to do what the book says. Right? So they've all been brought up on this little songbook. And so now when we say, it's not right, they're going to go, ooh, we can't change it. We can't change. That's what that's our culture. Don't change anything. But you know, the ISKCON, it's very interesting. The ISKCON that you and I joined was very different to the ISKCON, say, that the devotees in 1968 joined. There wasn't a Bhagavata class. There wasn't reading the deities. There wasn't all of the things that we do now. And you know, we could come back in 10 years' time and it'll be different again. There'll be subtle little changes. Right? You know, now, when devotees introduce their wife, they say, here's my Mataji. Right? Here's my managing Prabhu. That's not your managing, that's your wife. Right? Now you're going to call all women managing. Except your wife, of course. But you know, things change. Maybe we haven't got to that point yet. But there's some places in the world where, well, men will introduce their wives. Here's my Mataji. We laugh now, but who knows what it'll be like in the future. Okay, Kamarashima Bhagavatam Vijay, Silva Vijay, Lord of Uncle Vijay. 10 offences.